Support for this program comes from Jazz on the Tube, the Internet's largest collection of free streamable classic jazz videos. From Miles Davis to Louis Armstrong, from Thelonious Monk to Duke Ellington, you'll find it all on jazzonthetube.com. Start your free subscription today.
Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and welcome to another Jazz on the Tube podcast. In these podcasts, we talk to all kinds of people. Sometimes we talk to musicians, but we're looking to talk to everybody who's involved in the field of jazz, writers, scholars, educators, filmmakers. And today we have somebody who you must know. I almost fell out of my chair when I saw this. You're going to love it. It's, to me, it's some of the most important work that's being done in jazz scholarship or jazz filmmaking or whatever category you want to put into it. So let me explain how I came across this. As everybody knows, I spend way more time on YouTube than a human being should. I do that for you so that you get the good stuff and that you don't have to spend that much time on YouTube. You can just go straight to the good stuff. And I come across things, and I came across this clip of Phil Woods talking about meeting Charlie Parker and what a huge impact that had on his psychology and his approach to music and his career. And I thought, my God, this is one of the best little short clips on the dynamic of jazz and jazz education and jazz evolution that I've ever seen. And it's coming from Phil Woods, and it's about Charlie Parker. This is amazing. And then I discovered this wasn't just one clip. There's a ton of clips like this, all from the same guy who I'm going to introduce to you right now. And I'm so glad that he's doing this work, and I'm going to ask him how he came to it and what he's doing and what his future plans are. So welcome, Rob Wagner.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you very much.
Wow. So what are you up to? I mean, this is just this, I got, you know, because I'm a film guy and a jazz guy, and part of my day is devoted to sharing jazz films with people. This is literally like one of the most exciting things I've seen in a long, long time. So please tell me how you came to it, or maybe some of your background before you came to it, and how this project evolved, what's involved in this, and you know, anything else you can share with us.
So I am a cameraman, freelance cameraman. I've been doing that for decades. And when I'm not being paid to work on someone's project, then I do my own project, and then I pay. And that, I like that. It's fine. So I've done a few projects of my own, but I checked the dates because I knew we were going to speak today. In 2009, my daughter and I went to Iridium to see Curtis Fuller's 75th birthday celebration. Mm. Mm. And he was on the bandstand, of course. And so I'm watching the guy, and I said, well, wait a minute now. Curtis Fuller has played with everybody, and he's had an enormously great career. And we have his music. We have all of it. What we don't have is his reminiscences and his life story. So that was the trigger. That was the idea. And I actually got in touch with Curtis Fuller a few days later, and he loved the idea of the interview, but it never happened. And I don't know why. It just didn't. So I stuck with the idea, but 2 years passed. Nothing had happened. I didn't know how to proceed, really. So I was at Juilliard, and there was a scholarship for Ron Carter. They were establishing that. So I offered to make a film of that by interviewing the musicians who came to play in tribute. And in return, they set up two interviews with me from, you know, staff musicians that they have at Juilliard. And that's okay. How it started. Yeah.
Great.
Go ahead.
You know, so you broke the ice on that idea and got it rolling.
Right. And, yeah, that was so much fun. So I had two. And I remember saying to my producer friend, Joan Babchek, she's worked with me the whole project. This is 6 years on now, this project. Boy, I said, I hope we get 10 interviews. Well, we have 74 now.
Wow. And
I'd say each one is at least an hour. So we've got lots of footage, and it's all so interesting to me because it's just, as you know, this music is not as popular as it should be, and it's American history, and it needs to be, you know, it needs to be recorded. So that's what I'm doing.
You know, we were talking about that before, how revered this music is around the whole world. The big audiences that come out in Europe and Japan and the venues there and how fantastic it is. And, you know, sometimes I think about this. I've never written it down, and I really have to write about this someday, but I'll speak it out now, which is that we always talk about it being America's great music, which is true. You know, there's absolutely true. But I think we're underestimating jazz. Believe it or not, I really think even the most ardent jazz fans, and I include myself, have underestimated jazz because I would put this on the level of one of the great artistic contributions ever, like in all of human history. And I would literally, and I'm serious about this, and I've thought it out, and I'm sticking to my guns on this. I think that the flowering of jazz in America is equal to the Renaissance in Italy, and I think it's equal to the golden age of Athens, you know, with Pericles and Sophocles and Aristotle. Because when you think of these guys, you know, Charlie Parker, Duke Ellington, Sonny Rollins, Thelonious Monk, Bud Powell, Louis Armstrong, Lester Young, Count, I mean, it just goes on, and these guys were all giants. And the fortunate thing is every time somebody held a camera up and documented one of these bands, that was the fortunate thing. The unfortunate thing is it hasn't happened enough. That's why when I saw your project, I was over the moon. There are a lot of good documentaries on individual musicians, and that's great. But as you know, being a professional in the film industry, taking a film all the way from idea to showing it in the theaters is like, it's like building a battleship. I mean, it's such a huge project. And a lot of things, if we need a documentary, a full-blown documentary on every musician, we're never going to get there unless, right, you know, Bill Gates writes us a check or something. But you, this middle ground that you found of an intelligent interview and giving, you know, these great people a chance to reminisce and talk about their firsthand experiences with Charlie Parker, with Duke Ellington, with Thelonious Monk, I mean, this is just priceless. And we both know that, you know, the way the world is, 20 years from now, these guys won't be around to remember Charlie Parker, and we won't have that living memory. And
so archiving was the point of this, to archive those memories and those stories. And so that's been a success. We did that. We are doing this. We're shooting tomorrow, in fact. And we're just going to keep going. And some of these musicians, you know, they're stars, and they've been interviewed hundreds of times. Others are not stars. They're sidemen, and some of them have never been interviewed. So they just respond beautifully to that. You know, it's personal. That's what I say. It's not about the music. It's personal. Tell us about yourself and those you played with. And we just have a conversation.
Yeah, it's just so beautiful. Nobody... Nobody gets to be a jazz musician by accident. Nobody stumbles into it. You know, like the only way to get on that stage is, well, to put it in jazz terms, you've got to pay some serious dues. Right?
They practice. I'm amazed at what I've learned talking to these people. They are dedicated musicians, and they've overcome a lot and given up a lot to play. And they just, that's what they do. Very interesting.
Yeah. I think it's something I have to admit, as you know, when I was first a jazz fan, I was just sort of listening to the music and digging it. And then you go out and see people and you'd sort of see them and they just seem like gods, you know, and you just kind of, you don't really think about it because you don't know. I don't come from a musical family. I had a few musical friends, but you just don't know. You don't know what's behind the scenes. And I found over the years, as I learn about what's behind the scenes and this very serious training and education process, some of it formal, some of it self. In fact, I'd say every jazz musician, in addition to whatever formal training they get, and some of them have extensive formal training. That was something that kind of surprised me. It shouldn't have. But how many people from Tito Puente to, you know, all kinds of people actually did go to Juilliard, you know, mm-hmm. or did get a full-blown master's degree in composing and music. Oliver Nelson, I think, is an example of that. There's a lot of them. And then they take that formal training, and then they have to do their own self-exploration, self-guided, with the help of masters, of friends, colleagues, mentors. But they're all self-made men and women. I guess that's my point. If fans realize Joseph Campbell called it the hero's journey. Every one of these musicians is on a hero's journey, and they're all heroes because, as you pointed out, they had to overcome so many things to get to
the
game.
And if I could add to what you just said, they had all this training in maybe classical music or whatever, but they're drawn to jazz, and they go to jazz. They don't just, you know, it's not something they just take up lightly. They are moved to study it and to learn it, it's just great. You know, so one of the questions I ask is, at the end, after we've been talking for a while, music is a whole, you know, everything is music, but you don't play everything. You play what you like to play. Why do you play the music you play?
Mm.
And, you know, they tell you why. It's very interesting.
What a great question, because you're right. These guys could play anything. You know, mm-hmm. they could be studio musicians. They could be touring with Britney Spears and getting big money if they wanted to go that way. I mean, technically, they can go in any direction they want, but they choose to go this particular road. Wow. And so you're getting the answer to that from dozens of musicians.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
It's very good. So this project is, as I said, it's sort of a success right now because I've archived a lot and we're still doing it. And that's really what was the original aim. But if you think that you might want to take this footage and do something with it, there's a million things you could do. I put together just a little piece where two musicians are talking about Betty Carter, two musicians who played with her, Paul West on bass and Winard Harper on drums. And so they talk back and forth, not, you know, it's the editing, about her. And then we do a little piece on her that I got from a thing called Jazz on the Tube. And yeah. And it's just remarkable. So the few people I've shown it to, they go, oh, Betty Carter. Wow. And they, you know, they go listening for her now. It's
mm-hmm.
remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's a 5-minute piece, including her song. So that's one thing. Another thing, you know, really, you can go in a million directions. You could do it linearly through the years. But you could have people talk, answering the same question. Like on the bandstand, regardless of the instrument you're playing, you know, the instrument the musician's playing, I say, who do you listen for? Who do you rely on? Who do you depend on? And the answers are, you know, interesting. They're just interesting. Most people like the bass. They count on the bass.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, bass player, usually the drummer. I mean, that is the rhythm section, piano, bass, drums, as you know, but that's what they do. They just rely on each other. And then we talk about if there's a mistake on the bandstand, how they cover it up. They say usually the audience doesn't know. It's just so much fun to have these conversations because it's educational for me in the extreme. You know, I'm just hearing things I had no idea about.
Well, I was saying earlier, too, I think every little bit, or I think we talked about this off the record, but I'll put it on the record. You know, we're all advancing, whether we're, some people are genius musicians, some people are journeymen, some people are students, some people are not musicians at all. They can't read, they don't know what a chord is, you know, but they know what they like. And we're all advancing, even if we don't know anything about the technicalities of music. When you learn something, you know, even a simple thing like who do you lean on when you're playing? Who are you relying on? And you learn, oh, it's the bass player. Well, that's interesting. Well, that educates you. So the next time you go to see something or you listen to something, right, you're kind of paying more attention to that bass player. And mm-hmm. you're realizing, oh, that guy's not just somebody standing in the background plunking away at this big wooden thing. He's kind of like the anchor here. Okay, well, let's, you know, so we're
That's
all.
Exactly,
we're all making...
right. I've never appreciated the bass as much as I do since I've been doing this project. It's just, as soon as you tune into it, you realize the strength of it and how it just drives the band, the bass. You know, it can do that. And if I may, Ken, I'd like to say one more question that gets a great response.
Yeah, please.
I sort of frame it this way. I say, every night you're playing with world-class musicians. Oh, I would like to interject at this point. This is not the question. These are arguably the best musicians on earth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I mm-hmm. really feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
No argument there.
Yeah. Anyway, so I say, you're playing with the best, you know, great, great musicians, and the quality is always top, top-notch. Even on a off night, it's just high quality music. I said, but some nights something happens and the music just takes off. Tell me about that.
Mm.
And to a person, Ken, to a person, they say it never happens enough. And they describe it in every which way, how it's from the heavens, how it's out of body, how it's they're not even playing their instrument. They're just standing there and the music is flowing. And it's just a great, great thing. So a whole segment of this project could be that, you know, answer to that question.
I get it. You know, we live in the age of the mashup, you know, where we go, you know, we're just in a different media environment. You know, as you know, film used to be this precious commodity. You'd have to lug around these huge reels, and when you edited, you'd have to hang them on clotheslines and
right.
glue it together. I mean, and now a six-year-old literally, and I've seen this, I saw a five-year-old edit a film.
Wow.
I mean, it was a short film,
yeah,
but she edited it. I mean, this for and I've been, you know, in the, I'd had a little bit of involvement in the, I used to work at the Film Center building, and,
oh, yeah.
you know, I know the whole deal, right? So, we're in a different media environment now, and what you're creating is this unbelievably rich palette of colors that future filmmakers or contemporary filmmakers can with. I don't know. We'll talk about how they can work with you in a second, if you would, can assemble things like the things that you're describing. Maybe a reel just of drummers talking about drumming. Maybe a reel just of bass players talking about playing bass. Maybe, like, you know, some of the things that you've suggested too. I mean, it's you're creating. It's kind of like yesterday I had to go to a tile store, and you know, the tile store has this warehouse full of every possible tile you could imagine, different colors, different shades, different configurations, and someone can walk in there, or you can, and build a particular room with, you know, I'll take a little bit of this tile, a little bit of that tile, and now we have a room,
yeah.
You know? So, unbelievable. Well, tell me, if you would, a little bit about the first one that I saw that I imagine has to be one of the many gems in your collection, which is Phil Woods talking about Charlie Parker. Oh, my God.
Oh, that was remarkable. You know, he recently passed, Phil Woods.
Yeah. And this is why, by the way, but this is why what you're doing is so important. If you had not captured that, it would have been lost forever. You know?
Yeah.
And now because you did capture it, everybody that loves jazz, that really wants to dig deep into it, has access to that clip. And I'm telling you, that clip is a semester course on, I don't know what even to describe it, but
No. And that, when he was talking about that, that was the definition of this project. That's what we wanted to hear. You know, it's funny, but there's the generation, as you go through the generations, we started looking for the 90-year-olds, and we got many of them, and then 80-year-olds, you know, and then one guy in his like 60s, he said to me, you know, we're like the lost generation. He said, don't leave us out. He said, we caught the big names at the tail end of their careers. So
mm-hmm.
that opened up a whole new world for me as far as, you know, potential interviewees. And he was right, you know. So Phil Woods, we went to his house. I had a PA. I have a crew, a standard crew that we work with all the time. But I had a PA with us. And Phil Woods' office is like in a loft in his house, off the living room, upstairs. So we were there loading in and all that. I had already said hello to him upstairs, to Phil Woods. And in the living room, I said to the PA kid, I said, hey, go upstairs and say hello to Phil Woods. You'll be glad you did. And he was very reluctant, this kid. But he was following orders. So he went upstairs. And Phil Woods obviously heard me say that to him. And as soon as he got upstairs, I heard Phil Woods say, hey, buddy, what's your name? I go, wow, that is awesome. He put the kid at ease. You know, he did the work for yep. the kid. He didn't know what he was going to say, you know. It yep. was brilliant. Anyway, we had a great interview with Phil Woods. And he tells other stories, of course, but I just pulled that one out because it was so representative.
And you know, truth be told, not every jazz musician is like that. However, a very high percentage of them are. In other words, they're trying to uplift everybody.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's part of their mission, besides the music. They're all about bringing other people up.
I totally agree. Listen, 74 interviews, I would say, personality-wise, we ran into two sours. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yep.
when you take 74 people off the street, you're bound to get more than two sour personalities. And so
yeah, imagine 74 yeah. lawyers, 74 doctors, 74 accountants. Yeah, you're going to get a lot more than two. And I'll say filmmakers and web designers. I mean, they are a remarkable group of human beings.
And
it goes back to what we were talking about earlier is you've got to be a remarkable human being to get in it and stay in it and persist over the decades.
Mm-hmm.
It is not handed out. It's not you don't get a check every week. You don't, you know, there's no pension.
There was a Joe Wilder, the trumpet player, passed about, I don't know, 4 years ago. I don't know. But so we made a 4-minute film from his interview. And they, you know, at the church on Park Avenue, is it Park or Lex, the jazz church?
St. Peter's?
Yeah.
Yep.
Where they always have these memorials.
Yeah.
And it's free. When they have it, it's just they announce it on BGO, and people fill it up, the church. So at that one, and they showed that film there, which was gratifying to me, just as part of the memorial. But I'm watching the memorial, and there's musicians flew in from all around the country, some from Europe, to play for Joe Wilder in memorial. And I said, you know, and it went up for about an hour and a half, I guess, not much longer. I said, you could not put this show together, you know, just as a concert.
This right,
a
as a commercial
event.
You couldn't do it as a commercial enterprise.
Yeah, and the musicianship on the stage is so outstanding. And, you know, it filled up the church, the people did, but it doesn't happen that way often. I mean, these clubs in New York are small venues, and God bless them. They're great. The sound is great, but they're small. And so they can fill up and they can sustain, but they're not getting the attention that musicians that they deserve.
We had an experience like that just in the last month as a fundraiser for Puerto Rico. The old village gate, now La Poussin Rouge, offered their space, and Bobby Sanabria organized a benefit. And oh my God, the people that came out, Paquita de Rivera, Randy Brecker, Candido, John Faddis, and Larry Harlow, the great salsa player, piano player, just on and on and on. And I'm probably leaving somebody out, and I apologize. Jimmy Owens. And then Bobby's band, which has got like 20 crack musicians in. I mean, just top flight guys. And we were all thinking, you couldn't organize this for Carnegie Hall. But
but
because it was to help – and or, you know, in the case of the benefit, in the case of your story, to honor – a great person, or in this case to offer help, these guys just come, the rules are different. And I know Randy Brecker, speaking about planes, he was doing some gig in China and came back a day early, no sleep, to make sure that he could participate. So this is what goes on.
It is what goes on. It's remarkable. Yeah.
You know, one thing you mentioned too earlier, which I'm so happy to hear, you're interviewing the side men and the side women because they are the unsung heroes of jazz. Their musicianship is every bit as sky high, but not everybody can be the star, and a star needs the side men to make it happen. So, and they're not given the credit that, or the attention they should be getting, so that you're interviewing them. And you've mentioned that for some of these guys, you're the first interview they've ever had.
Mm-hmm. And just like in any field, it's not a meritocracy. You know, the best don't always get the attention. And musicians realize that. And so I say, who do you admire as a musician? And then who do you admire as a person? And, you know, nobody trashes anybody. That's not what this is about. But they mention their fellows. They don't mention the big stars, you know, unless they really interacted with them, you know. But otherwise it's, oh, yeah, I used to play. He was the bass player for years. He's a great guy. You know, that's all. Just real human people-to-people stuff. No artifice, you know.
So let's talk about how people can, now that we've, you know, gotten people all excited about this, we should tell them where they can dive into it. I found you on YouTube. Do you offhand know the name of your YouTube channel?
No, I don't, but the website's available.
Okay, great. Great. What's the website?
It's robertwagnerfilms.com. Also, you could go to artistsofjazz.com. That's the working title.
Great. And I believe some variation of Artists of Jazz, if not that exact phrase, is the name of your YouTube channel.
For people that
want to check it out on YouTube.
Yeah. So just to say, as I said before, we have an hour with each musician or more. So what's on the website is just a little story that they tell that's interesting. I really originally did it just to show musicians what this project was like. If, you know, take a look, this is what we're doing, this is what it looks like, so see if you want to be interviewed. And that's why I did it. But now I just, you know, there it is.
It's great. And Jazz on the Tube, and I will definitely be using them if I may, and pointing people to your site. Now that I know that this treasure exists, I'm wondering how, I mean, you're just doing it. Do you have any affiliations or support or collaboration with any institutions, or is this just your
right now? I found out right long ago, if you want to do something, you just do it. And, that's true. I really believe that.
No, I'm laughing because it's the truest thing on earth. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can look for grants. Then they want to have their opinion. And, you know, if you can proceed financially or whatever, proceed. That's how I look at it. And, yeah, it's my project. And I love that idea, you know.
And that's how Jazz on the Tube was built, too. I didn't have time to do anything except do it. And now I've got this thing. And now I got to figure out what to do with it. Let's say I'm just thinking of some scenarios. What if somebody's a filmmaker and they're doing a documentary on one of your guys, one of your subjects, or on a theme that, you know, is in your archive? Can they contact you and, you know, talk with you about working something out with the material? Sure. How does that?
Yes, absolutely. Let's see. I mean, you can contact me through the website for sure. I think you did once.
Yes.
Yourself. That's easy. And I mean, I really don't know what to do with this footage other than someday just dumping it somewhere where someone would appreciate it. You know, if we don't turn out to try to make a longer single project out of it, you know, I don't really know.
Well, it's great that you've got the short clips up on YouTube and on your site. That alone is just it's a massive contribution. I'm thinking, you know, this is something that I have on my list of things to do, which is a very long one. And as you may know, there are now, and this shocks me because this wasn't the way when I was growing up, but there are now hundreds of formal jazz education programs in the country, if not the world.
Yeah.
And I know there is a jazz education group. I can't remember the name of it. I attended one their conference last year in New Orleans. And so there's an organized group, you know, of jazz educators. And, gee, they should all know about you. I guess is my short
story. But let me say this. You just reminded me of something. The older musicians talk about that even into the 50s maybe or 60s, they didn't teach jazz in colleges. And
They
did not do that. There was no such thing. They didn't even want you to play jazz. And so they're studying, those who went to school are studying other musics, you know, classical mostly, I guess. Oh, my God. So many things have just landed in my brain. One guy was very good classically, and he knew there was no place for him in the classical music world. No black person could play classical music.
Yep.
So he gravitated to jazz, where he was welcome. But when there was no school, those in the school who wanted to play jazz had to do it outside of school. And they formed little groups and they would do it. And they wanted to do it. That's the driving force. Otherwise, not in school and prior to schools, the older musicians would take the younger musicians under their wing and give them an opportunity and mentor them. That's how it grew. And people say that's not happening anymore.
Mm.
Schools have taken over, you know. The mentoring from musician to musician isn't happening nearly as much as it was. Wait. Every once in a while when I go around to these concerts at these venues, some musicians, younger ones, you know, even young, even 60s and 50s and stuff, they bring out the older guys, you know, out of respect.
And they,
and they let them play. And it's just great to see.
You know, I had a conversation recently with David Amram, and he was, you know, he's a very positive guy, and he was diplomatic, but I think he was hinting at a concern that he had that, you know, it's great that there's the classes in the schools. I mean, that's a great thing, but that it was getting a little too formalized.
Mm-hmm.
And that formalization, and I'm putting words in his mouth right now. This is now me speaking. But when I read his bio, which I'm reading right now, fantastic book, by the way, his writing, he's like Mark Twain. If people haven't read David Amram, they're missing something huge, as I was. But he talked about his own upbringing, and it was exactly that. It was the mentoring. He grew up in, where was this? I guess it was D.C., yeah, one of the places he was in. And, you know, he's a white kid, white Jewish kid, and this guy was an older black guy, and the black guy heard him play and said, hey, come and join our gig. We're going to be at the Elks Lodge or something. And so he invited this 12-year-old kid, based on his chops, to come and play, and paid him a dollar. And when he was, you know, and when he was, this was his first gig, you know, and when he was, and he was 12, and when he was there, the guys would give him little hints. And, you know, for instance, he got there earlier, he was the first one there. And then when the first musician arrived, said, good kid, this is how you need to be, you know. So these little musical education, but also a moral education and a how to be in the world education. And we don't want to lose that, and we don't want it all to be this formalized school thing where, you know, you got to pay tuition and you got to pass the exam, and you know what I mean?
Teaching some balk at the way they're being taught, the way they're teaching students these days. What was the word you used? It's too rote or something, you know?
Yeah, formalized.
Yeah, too formalized. They don't like that so much. Can I tell you one quick story I just thought of?
Please.
Jimmy Cobb, he said, Miles was playing one night somewhere, and Philly Joe didn't show up. So they made an announcement, anybody have drums? And a guy says, I have drums in my trunk. And he said, well, go get them. So this guy got to play with Miles Davis, set up his drums and played a set. And, you know, memorable for sure.
Yep.
So at the end of the set, he comes to Miles and he said, so how did I do? And Miles says, go apologize to the owner.
Oh, ouch. Ouch. Well, you know, real world. Well, you know, that it's interesting. This just popped into my mind. The film production world has some similarities to the jazz world. In other words, you know, hey, we need a grip. Can you do this? Yeah. Okay. Do it.
No, you know what I mean? Right. The parallels are exactly the same. They come together for a gig, and then they go their separate ways. That's filmmaking. It's identical. I'm very aware of that. You're absolutely right.
And if you do the job right, you're invited back.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Nobody's asking about your pedigree or anything, you know?
But if you do it wrong, goodbye. And that's the same as the set. Yeah.
Exactly. So when you're with a crew of experienced film guys, film production guys, it's a nice experience. They know their business.
And I've been on the set my whole working life, and it's just a beautiful way to work. And everybody wants to be there. Everyone's on time. No one is ever late in the film business, ever.
Right.
And
right.
The work gets done. It's his most efficient thing ever.
Yeah, and the work, by the way, you know, talk about behind the scenes. The work is hard. Like, weird stuff happens. Things break. Electricity's not running. You know, cops tell you to move. I mean, every imaginable thing that can go wrong goes wrong, and you have to roll with it and make it work, period.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, I mean, that is jazz, too. You know, you're in a club. The sound system doesn't work. The piano's out of tune. The owner doesn't – you know what I mean? And it's just like you got to rise to the occasion.
Exactly.
I'm trying to remember this. I just saw the other day. It was, I think, Dave Amram was talking about his experience with Monk, which is a clip all unto itself. And I think it was Monk, but if it wasn't Monk, it could have been Monk, and it could have been any one of a number of musicians. And it was a bad gig. There was, like, you know, nobody there. It was just a disaster, you know. And Monk said, "Look, every night is Carnegie Hall." That's the mentality. Wherever we are, wherever we're playing, whoever the audience is, two guys in the audience and they're both drunk, I don't care. We're in Carnegie Hall. And what a beautiful moral lesson, right, for everybody how to conduct their own life in whatever field they're in.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of the point that you're capturing, is above and beyond these musical anecdotes, which are gold, and these historical anecdotes, which are gold, I feel there is moral education to be gotten from these stories. How to live one's life with dignity, and, well, dignity is the word, you know, how to do it right, regardless of what life throws at you. And let's face it, being a jazz musician has got to be the hardest profession, one of the hardest professions imaginable.
Yeah.
You know?
Hardest to get there, less reward for the work you put in. Yeah, truly.
Yeah, and even the, you know, the working conditions and just, you know, just everything. Yeah. And yet, as you said, you talked to 74 guys, and of those 74, you could only categorize two of them as sour. I mean, that's just amazing. I don't think there's any demographic. I don't even think if you went to yogic swamis in the Himalayas, come up with a number that favorable. Right. You know what I mean? These are great human beings. Well,
and they're dedicated to their craft, as you're saying, and that's true. So they want to perform. They want to do it the best. Someone said, Thelonious Monk says, we swing from first note to last note.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. There you go. And like I said, what a lesson to us all in whatever we're doing. And what a great lesson for children. You know, I think all the time about the young generation. And, you know, I'm reading David Amram's biography. And, you know, wow, kids could really roam around back in the 30s. I mean, he got into some wild stuff. And even me, I was born in 59. So, you know, I was a kid in the 60s and a teenager in New York in the 70s. And we were pretty free range, you know.
World now.
It really is. And I hope that we're doing right by these kids. And I don't know that we are, because part of life is just, you know, having the ability to have a free range experience. But I hope we're setting a good example for them on how what matters in life and what doesn't. And I think these guys, are people that we could look to. They're not, they don't set themselves up that way. They're not putting themselves up as paragons of virtue, but I think in fact, in reality, they are.
They are.
Yeah. Now, Rob, I think you and I could talk the rest of this day and late into next week, but we have to cut it at a certain point. But right. I'm going to ask that you come back sometime and we can just talk more about this because I think it's an endless topic.
I would love to. It is endless. It just goes on and on, which is what endless means. But yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And the website again for people to go to?
RobertWagnerFilms.com or artistsofjazz.com. Same place.
Great. And I know that you're I don't think you're soliciting support of any kind, but if there's any secret millionaires out there and you want to blow this up and make it huge, you know?
That's so funny, Ken. We did not talk about this, you and I, but that you hit the nail on the head. My producer, Joan Babchak, and I went to speak with someone who produces documentary features just to mm-hmm. find out what the cost would be, generally speaking. And, you know, we talked about it could go this way, it could look that, it could be a series, it could be a feature. Anyway, ballpark figure for getting the performance footage, the music rights, and undertaking the editing, enormous task, ballpark $1 million. So
yeah,
that's
right.
What and you it's just said, and that's what it seems to be. So yeah, right. I accept $1 million offers.
And it, you know, for the layman out there, that may sound like, my God, that's a lot of money, but
no, it's not.
You know, yeah, things have gotten a lot. Not only is that in the ballpark, but if anybody looks around, and, you know, who's been around for a while, everything's gotten way more expensive to do.
Yeah.
You know, we're all paying for stuff at a rate that if somebody told you 20 years ago you're going to be paying X amount of dollars for this, you'd say, no way on earth would I pay that amount. And now that's the normal price for stuff.
I hate to say it, but candy bars used to be a nickel.
Yeah. Well, I remember, and there are definitely people older than me listening to this, but I remember when a hot dog was 10 cents and a hamburger was a quarter, and you really had to make a decision whether you were going to splurge on that quarter.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, that's not the way it is anymore. And so I'm not surprised to hear $1 million. And, you know, the music rights thing is a huge issue. I mean, that can be really, really.
For a different film, I asked for music rights. I pursued music rights for one tune.
Yeah.
And so I got in touch with this lady who was the right person to speak with. And she says, the music has three daddies, which is the composer, the performer, and I guess the, you know.
Mechanical?
The record company or the whoever put it out. I forget. Whoever owned it. She said, and they all get paid. So.
Yeah. which is a good thing. You know, you want the musicians to be paid. On the other hand, it creates, you know, in certain realms, you know, if you were doing the Super Bowl, you know, halftime show, and you had a budget commensurate with that, okay, it's easy to write the check. But when you're doing a documentary on jazz, it's just out of proportion. It's a challenge. It's a challenge.
Well said. It's out of proportion for the product. Yeah.
I had a friend who made a beautiful film on James Booker, the great New Orleans jazz pianist, who never really made it out of New Orleans much. He did a couple of shows in Switzerland, and thank God they were filmed. And this guy was, you know, he was Liszt, he was Bud Powell, he was Beethoven. I mean, this guy was off the charts genius. And she made a beautiful film about him. And that film was hung up for years because of the cost of the music rights. And finally, I think she prevailed and was able to get something done, but that is a big issue. But
and there's a big investment that may not see a return.
Oh, you know what? I hate to say it. Knowing what I know about business, I can pretty much say there's never been a jazz documentary that's done anything but cost the producer money.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
so
I think
it's a labor
of
love on this end too. Yeah.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, that's why I say, you know, I don't see a mechanism that you have set up to solicit contributions to your expenses.
No.
But I want to put that in the ear of some people. You know, if you're somebody that's, you know, got, you know, some people do. Some people have got more resources You know, I got plenty of, I never call it disposable income because there's nothing disposable about money, but I call it, but there is, some people have more discretionary income than others. That's just a fact, you know? And if somebody's in that position and they love jazz, I got to say this from a point of view of honoring the living while they're alive and then having a record of them for future generations, I don't know anybody that's doing a better project. And I say that as a guy that spends all day looking at jazz videos and investigating this jazz world. There's a lot of great documentaries out there. They're all important. I support them all. They're very valuable. But this just simple, and it's not simple because there's a lot of work involved, but it's conceptually simple. This simple project giving the musicians a chance to talk about their lives and their development in music and their experiences in music and their experiences with other musicians and just piling that up so that we have it. Because we got to remember, you know, we're all mortal, you know, and when these guys go, it's gone. And I want to just go back to what I said earlier, and I really stand by this. Jazz is not just America's great, great contribution to world culture. It is that, there's no question. This is jazz, what these men and women accomplished, I think is right on par with the Renaissance and the Golden Age of Athens. I don't see or any one of these other golden ages that have flourished through history on the planet. Those are just the two ones that come to my mind, you know. It is something for all humanity for all time. And I think we're going to have great musicians, and we do have great musicians coming up all the time, but I doubt we're ever going to have a slice like those guys from Louis Armstrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Up to,
no, you're
and
right.
I hope it happens again, but that was something that humanity and it takes, you know, all those things have to line up, all the historical forces, all the economic forces, all the demographic forces, all the creative forces. You know, it's like rolling the dice and they come up with a certain configuration. Or it's even more complex than dice. It's really more like six balls in the lotto. You know, it's going to come up a certain set of numbers, and it may never come up that set of numbers at that level ever again, you know, ever. So
yeah,
the
social forces that cause that to happen, well said, by the way, what you just said.
Yeah.
The social forces that caused it to happen include a heavy dose of racism.
Yeah.
Where people were denied access to other things, so they created this incredible music. That's how I see it.
You talked about something very important, and this could be one of your sub-films easily. The number of musicians of a certain era who got full-fledged classical training and were superb musicians by any standard, you know, who found out when they grew up, oh, no, you can't play in the Los Angeles Symphony. That's never going to happen.
Right.
And that happened, I know, to Eric Dolphy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, I believe that was also the case with Charles Mingus. And I know it's the case with many guys of that generation. It's not just a few.
Right.
They were young people, and they poured their heart. I mean, I can't imagine anything more heartbreaking,
yeah,
frankly. I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, it's crazy.
No.
But it's what happened. And
the
what
history
did they
of
do?
America tied in with this history of music, yeah.
Yep. And what did they do? They took that and they made something spectacular for the ages that will live forever. You know, it's kind of like, this isn't a perfect analogy, but it's kind of like, you know, where do pearls come from? Well, pearls are sand, you know, this irritant that an oyster has to deal with. And that's what that generation, a couple of generations of people actually, that's what they did with what they had, with what they were faced with. And I think that would be a very interesting story. And I think it's important, you know, something for, you know, people, because people, you know, young people have no idea. They don't know that you could not be a lawyer. You could not be a teacher. You could not be a doctor. You were virtually banned. They're always the rare person that somehow, by some unbelievable force of personality and luck, got through that. But for the most part, doors were closed everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And kids just can't – I don't think they know. I don't think they know how bad it was. And I think this – at least the musical kids could get that lesson. They could see, my God, are you kidding me? They wouldn't let Eric Dolphy play flute in the Los Angeles Symphony. Are you kidding me? You know, it illustrates the madness of it, the insanity of it, you know, so beautifully. So Anyway, I hope everybody, I know everybody's going to go look at your site. I don't even have to encourage people. They're practically already there. They may have left us a half hour ago. And then they said, enough with these guys. I want to see the films. But I just can't speak highly enough of what you're doing. If we can help in any way, we're going to run some of your YouTube clips with your permission. And every time we do, we're going to have a direct link to your site. If anybody's, you know, like thinking, gee, I got this $1 million I don't know what to do with, or I'm looking for a good thing to do it with, I would really talk with Rob, because I just don't, you know, in the realm of jazz, in the realm of history, in the realm of culture, this is one of the big, great projects I know of. So, Rob, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for those kind words.
Yeah.
I would say I have a friend who does the YouTube stuff for me. I don't do that. So I don't know how much is on YouTube, but all those little pieces that I've done are on the website. So I'll say that. And of the 74 interviews, I think I've only got about 40 on the website. So I'm way behind, but I'm working on it.
Okay. Hey, let me ask you this. And this sometimes opens up a can of worms, but if a capable, competent, I hope everybody heard that, capable, competent, reliable, professional young person who wants to be an intern and contribute their skill and diligence. Everybody hearing that? This is not a babysitting job for Rob. I'm talking about somebody that's coming ready to work. Would you be able to make use of somebody that had all those skills and was top-notch?
Absolutely. Yeah, right. Contact me through the website. Sure.
Great.
We have a couple PAs on each shoot, so yeah. I mean, they don't have to be that advanced, but an interest in film, interest in music is good.
Well, the main thing is they know how to work. If there's little technical things they need to learn, that I get that, but we need people that know how to work that are going to be a plus. I don't know if you've done this. I'm almost inclined to do it on your behalf with your permission. Is there are a lot of film programs in the city, and I wonder if some of those film departments would like to let their students who need projects and need experience know about you.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I think I love the film business. I really do. The whole process, as we spoke earlier, it's just fun. And the thing is, for me, this project, we shoot once a month. That's it.
Gotcha.
So there's only so much I can offer to anybody. You know, I have a standing crew, but you know, I would not discourage someone from getting in touch. But
great.
Yeah.
Very good. Hey, is somebody washing a car back there where you are?
Yeah, no. Don't ask.
Okay, I won't. Okay. Hey, you know what? You've been so generous with your time. Let me thank you again and say goodbye, and everybody go visit Rob's site. And if you can think of a way to be helpful, I think this would be a great place to put energy. Okay, Rob. Thanks a lot.
That was a pleasure, Ken. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please share it. That's how we grow. And remember to subscribe to jazzonthetube.com, the internet's largest collection of free, streamable, classic jazz videos.